bag. Wise words, sir. I appreciate it. Once again, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. People Power Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Dro, Derek, Rudy, and Statman Brad in the house. We want to thank our friends over at Chico Community Acupuncture, offering accessible and effective health care through acupuncture. Chico Community Acupuncture offers relief from aches and pains, stress reduction, and helps promote general wellness. At Chico Community Acupuncture, payment is based on a sliding scale located at 1815 Mangrove Avenue. That's 1815 Mangrove Avenue. Appointments and information at ChicoCommunityAcupuncture.com, on Facebook, and at 345-5300. Se habla español. All right. Well, we're going to get into the news here in one second. I just wanted to remind everyone that the Giants swept the Dodgers, even though you guys are still in first place, which is pretty frustrating.
That was vomit inducing right there.
That was the most. Yeah. That's the coolest thing that's happened, you know, this summer. Yeah.
Really?
Giants, I mean, I don't know. Giants sweeping the Dodgers. No one expected that at all.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. I'm trying to find Derek's news. I'm struggling. Well, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, and the cool part about it is I gave Derek, I think, what, two rooms yesterday? One at Riley's and one at Darren's house. I was like, hey, just hold on to this.
Oh. I think you said rooms for a second.
Oh, brooms.
Brooms, yes. Brooms, yes. I saw a lot of brooms last night. Yes, yeah. I did. They were brought out for us. I commend you for it, but still, a little something for you. Okay?
Hey,
just enjoy that.
Yes, sir. I'll
take whatever you want to do with it.
I'll take it home.
Put it in
save
your pocket.
It for later, dude.
Save
right?
it for later, please.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds fun to deal with. Here you go.
What? Hey, Rose. We're jumping right in, apparently.
Yeah, it's all good. Time for the news. Don't cross over elephants, y'all. All right?
Ooh,
all right? Don't,
facts.
Don't
mess with elephants.
I'm, in general.
Massive animals.
If you are a fan of this show and a fan of this segment, you know how much I am a fan of nature and how much I always say respect nature. Because nature does not care. It doesn't have feelings. It's not going to worry about whether you're small, fragile, non-agile, slow. Doesn't matter.
It's their home.
It's theirs.
Yeah.
We're living in it, okay? Yeah. It is not shark-infested waters. We're people-infested waters that sharks live in, okay?
Yeah.
Bradley,
you.
With the solid point of the show,
it
will forever be in memorial. And I will never forget that, Brad. But that being said, don't mess with elephants in particular. Like, especially the big ones. Like, the ones that just, it doesn't take them anything except just a blow. And you're on the ground and your probably neck is broken.
Yep.
Okay? Now, I'm not saying Maya Mura did anything really despicable against this elephant, but apparently enough for her to get trampled by said elephant in India, in the Odisha state on Thursday, this past Thursday. But not just that. Got trampled, yes, by the elephant.
Ouch.
At her funeral, homie came back, ransacked the funeral. Came back for seconds. After the deal was done.
Dude, she did something wrong,
dipped on her and did not want to. He's like, you know, you're all remembering this moment right now.
Wow. I ain't done yet.
So, Maya Mura, I don't know what you did.
She did something.
You did something. You might have hit a pachyderm or something. That baby elephant, and they productive of them. Wow.
That's wild.
Came back for seconds at the funeral. Because that's the thing. Elephants.
Don't forget.
They don't. Elephants, the smartest ones out there. Like them. They are. Them, chimpanzees,
they're out here drawing pictures, dude.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
They don't forget.
Yeah. That's wild. Came back for
seconds. Thank God for seconds afterwards, man.
Imagine. The elephant did a drive-by on a funeral. That is insane.
Yeah.
On the same person.
Yeah. Just double down.
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
Yeah,
right? Did you hear the message? Hear it again. Okay?
I ain't done yet.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so as you can see, I'm in a mood right now, guys, because the next story comes at you even better. We're keeping it in the same area right now because India's having trouble with their wildlife, okay? And I found about sloth bears. Have you heard about a sloth bear before?
No.
Apparently, so the sloth bear out there, I don't know if it certainly got its name because it resembles a sloth. It doesn't. It still looks like a normal bear initially. Kind of has a little smushed face.
Okay.
But apparently, sloth bears kind of dangerous out in India. And unfortunately, for Mukesh Rai and his wife, Gita, age 43 and 39, encountered the harsh way, that of a sloth bear, after they're leaving their temple and walking through the jungle, going back to their home, attacked by a sloth bear.
Wow.
Now, this one didn't come back for seconds. This sloth bear doesn't quite have the memory of said elephant, nor I don't think this couple did anything to that said sloth bear.
Yeah,
the sloth
bear was just a random act of violence.
Yeah, that was just a bad part of town. You're just in the wrong part of the jungle at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know? So watch for your corner of that. Know what trees you're at.
Temple, too, man.
Know what trees you're at before you you hit out there. And it was apparently not a pretty sight, as this sloth bear did its damage. And apparently, again, like I said, these sloth bears account for more deaths than any other animal.
Really?
In India.
They're savages.
Yeah, man. More so than any tigers out there.
Wow.
Yeah, but bear attacks, bear attacks are less likely, but they are the most likely from the sloth bear. If you're getting attacked by a bear, it's a sloth bear.
It's going to be a sloth bear.
It's going to be a sloth bear.
Wow. Interesting.
So careful out there, guys. If you're in India, sloth bear, it does not move slothly.
Hey, Brad, you want to pull up a picture of a sloth bear?
Yeah, I can.
I'm just curious.
It.
Yeah. Now, I won't end you there, because that's tough ways to go, right?
What?
I know
this
how
thing
much...
looks cuddly. This does not look like a vicious creature. Of all the bears, this does not look like a vicious one.
Yeah, what can I say? Looks can be deceiving.
It is very deceiving.
Oh, that's a little cutie.
There you go.
It looks like a little cuddle bear.
Look it up right there, but careful. They'll get you. They'll get you.
That's a weird. Weird-looking bear. Anyways, continue.
So, we move on to just, again, know your surroundings. Know what you've told people. Know what you could be in, where you could be around, and could be seen by he, she, or whom. Because it could happen to you. Where you call out to work saying you can't come in. But Willie, what you're doing? You're going to a live sporting event because that's what you do as an American. Or not just an American. As any good fandom of a proper team. When your team's playing in the middle of the day and you can get out of work for it, you do it.
Yep.
That's a God-given right. Actually, it's not a God-given right because you can still lose your job for it. That's what unfortunately happened to my man when he went to go see his famous Rangers play in the Europa League final against Eintracht Frankfurt. Had to go see him. His Rangers from Scotland come down, did a fantastic run, made it to the finals of the Europa League, which, again, if they win that, gets them into the Champions League next year. Huge moment for that club to win such a prestigious trophy in the European world. My man has to go. But unfortunately for my man, and why I cannot find his name right now, I had it before, was caught on TV at that said game and seen by his boss.
No. That's the worst.
Having the time of his life, granted his team did lose.
On TV? He was
caught on TV cheering for his team, giving him the proper salutes for the Rangers.
Wow.
And unfortunately for him, Mr. Thomas Michael lost his job because of it.
Dude, his boss is probably,
That's a pretty harsh boss, I gotta say. I will say, if you can tell him, hey man, it's my team's in the final. I got
to
go.
I have to go.
Yeah, if you're going to fire me for that, then I'll take that L.
Yeah.
But maybe don't lie to the guy. I feel like maybe if I'm all straight up with him and give him that, a little better response.
Yeah.
But again, I will say, kind of like the boss would be like, I get it. You're there. All right. But I will say, I feel like if that was the boss, I'd be like, yeah, just tell me you're going, man. I would have been cool with it.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Your team's in there. I would too.
100%.
Sorry, Thomas. Better luck next time. Actually, just watch where you're sitting then. Don't be anywhere near the broadcast. I don't know. I've never been on TV
Or come into disguise. Like, put some, funky glasses on, face paint or something to disguise yourself.
Yeah.
I have never done this, by the way, if anybody from work is listening. I've never done this.
I was just saying, just minimum. Hat and a glass.
Yes.
Glasses. That's all you need.
Some disguise.
Some little sunglasses, and you can... That's plausible deniability right there.
Yep.
That's all you need. Just need plausible deniability.
Well, there's no hat, no nothing covering your face. Bro, that is you right there.
You are raw-dogging it out there. Yeah. You know what? You deserve to get caught.
Yep.
Don't raw-dog it, y'all. Cover it up.
Facts.
That's the news, y'all.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah, my bad. I thought that was a cue. That's the news.
Very good. All right. Thank you, as always, sir. Don't mess with animals, I think, is...
Always. Always the statement here.
Yeah.
I choose animals over anyone else. Because if you put yourself in a situation where an animal's going to get you, that animal deserves to get you. Because animals, if they're going to eat, they need to eat. Like, predators, it's that's tough fair. Out there. And if you're presenting them a meal, if they're going to present them with a meal, that's like, here's a steak dinner right in front of you. Nope. Yeah. Nope. No, I'm taking it away. No, I'm going to run after them. I'm going to get it. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to say, I put it out there. You deserve it. Okay?
That's fair. Shall we bring in our foreign correspondent?
Please.
We shall.
Every week, our foreign correspondent, Aaron, joins us to get us caught up on the world around sports that we're not paying close enough attention to. So, Aaron, hello.
How's it going, guys?
What's up, girl?
We're doing well. We're doing well. I think we need to start this with a round of applause and a congratulations
to your Colorado Avalanche
making it.
Oh, actually, no. You know what? They've cost me a lot of money this year. So, yeah.
Well, that's your own damn fault for not voting for them.
I would say, in my defense, Rudy, I thought they were going to win the series. I know.
But you know me, and I'm a degenerate gambler. I'm like, all right, I'm going to bet on, you know, I forgot what. I think it was the Blues. Anywho, I'm 0 for 2 because I bet against. No, I bet. I forgot
anyways,
what happened.
Anyways, you bet poorly.
I'm 0 for 2 with
they the
Avalanche.
They did drop the first two games versus the Rangers. Yeah. I was a little bit scared, yeah. I'm not going to lie, and I was afraid I was going to look like an idiot. But then I realized I was in your company, so it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. We would have just skated right over it.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. So let's talk about it. The Lightning are just the dynasty that will not go away, and your Avalanche are facing them. So where are your nerves at this very moment for this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pressure is on the Avalanche, right? The Tampa Bay is sort of this new dynasty. You know, they have their repeat appearances. So the pressure really is all on Colorado. Colorado has no defense. If you watch any of the games, they were incredibly high-scoring. And so that just means there's no defense. Tampa's got a great defense. So we will see. I am nervous, but I am very hopeful. I think that the Avalanche have more to prove. And so that might give them an edge since it's been so long. But yeah, Tampa Bay is a force to be reckoned with. And I'm hoping that since the Avalanche have had more rest is going to pan out. Them.
How are you feeling about that Tampa Bay Lightning fan that got laid out by the New York Rangers that giving fuel to this Tampa Bay Lightning team right now? That's got to be something, though, right? Like, that's not nothing.
It's not nothing, but, you know, it's so hard to tell in hockey. It's just, I feel like, you know, in most of the other sports, there are, you know, indicators or there are benchmarks, but in hockey, I feel like it's so much more of a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, hockey seems to be more random, where if you could get a hot goalie, you can go all the way. But here you are in the Stanley Cup Finals. You picked the Avalanche and the Lightning, did you not?
I sure did.
Wow.
Both teams.
Wow, okay.
So if you had been listening to our hockey updates.
Fuck yeah.
With Aaron, and you placed a wager, you'd be doing really well right now. Because she told you all.
Fuck yeah.
That the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Colorado Avalanche were going to be playing in the Stanley Cup, and here we are. So once again, shouts to you and congratulations to your team making it. Stanley Cup Finals starts on Wednesday. So we're looking forward to that. So let's talk about golf. Because there has been some major drama going on between the PGA and this new league, LIV, or this new tournament. So can you give the folks some background on what's going on there?
Yeah, so LIV is this new tournament. Like you said, it is backed by this Saudi fund, which is basically, we all know, the Saudi government, right? And there are some ethics questions there having to do with Saudi Arabia, to put it mildly. And a lot of people are really upset by this. I think, one, because it is Saudi Arabia, and two, the PGA, you know, is really, you know, the number one. But, you know, the PGA, I think, is a monopoly. And so, you know, what loves a competition more? And so, you know, at the beginning of the year, Phil Mickelson announced, he's like, I'm going to play at LIV or with LIV. I don't know, however he says it. And he goes, you know, in spite of all of their human atrocities, I'm going to play with them. And that's what got him in big trouble. But it just started this past weekend and we had 17 PGA defectors. And some big names, obviously Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson. They offered Tiger Woods, I think, a 9-figure contract that he turned down. But yeah, this is it's some real competition that the PGA is facing. And they did something really petty, which was, you know, they didn't, they suspended all of the players who went to play at this LIV tournament over the weekend. They didn't suspend them until they teed off, though. It feels really petty. It's just like, you could have said you were going to suspend them before, but you chose to wait until they teed off. So they're really adding to it. And it's turning out to be very interesting.
How does this all shake out in your opinion? What is the future? Is LIV going to be an actual competitor to the PGA moving forward, or do you think the PGA is going to lay down sanctions and suspensions and punishments that are so grave that people eventually end up not wanting to even go play in the other tournament or league or however you want to put it?
I think LIV has potential because, you know, they can still play in the majors. The U.S. Open is this weekend. It's not sanctioned by the PGA. And so if you can still play the four majors, and at least in the interim, you're going to make way more money with LIV. It's got potential. I think what they're going to struggle with is, you know, Saudi Arabia, it's really got a bad rap. And I think it's what their human rights violations are not nothing. They are atrocious. You know, they killed the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. They execute you if you're gay. It's not, you know, the best country, but what country is perfect? You know, you don't see the NBA cutting ties with China. And so will they be able to get over this hurdle? You know, I would hope so, because, you know, the standard or the bar is pretty low for all of the other large sports organizations.
I think that's something that needs to be brought up. I kind of hated the fact this past weekend of how the PGA and all the people playing for it had this, like, holier-than-thou moral high ground. Like, oh, we're playing for them. We're all despicable. Yeah, we're all in the muck together. Yeah. You know, you're just as much covered in the dirt. You might say, oh, we're not as bad as them. But that's just like, you know, that's the pot calling the kettle black, I feel. You know? It's just like, we're all in this. Okay? And is it bad? Of course. It is bad. But, like, to try to deny that you're not bad either.
Yeah.
That's just like, I don't like it.
As people tweet out their messages via their iPhone that was probably built in China.
Yeah. Because we don't really care. Like, when it comes down to it, we don't.
We're still going to buy an iPhone, right? Yeah. Everyone in this room has an iPhone.
And like I said, the NBA's connection with China is huge. Yeah. And to deny China's human rights violations because, like, oh, it's China. I hate that hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, we live in a world full of it, but definitely an interesting story. Aaron, always excellent. You got anything for us on the way out?
U.S. Open is this weekend, and I am pumped.
It's going to be fun to see those guys out there. Like, how are they going to be accepted? If they're going to be booed? Like, what's the feeling like? I want drama.
If you were going to take a flyer this weekend, who are you taking?
I don't know. I've got no one. Sorry, but it's going to be. I think it will be really fun to watch. It's taking place in Boston, and Boston fans are wild. But I hope that they cheer loudly for Phil.
All right, and then one thing before you leave: what's your prediction on the series on the finals? I'll drop $100 on that, and if we hit, I'll split it with you 50-50.
Okay, I'm going to say Avs in six. And I'll split the $100 with you if you lose it. How about that?
No, hey, it's on me, girl. I got it.
Okay. Wow.
All right.
There it is.
You heard it here first.
So it's 4-2 Avalanche then.
All right.
Okay, let's go.
Avs in six.
I like it.
Excellent as always. We'll catch up with you next week. Thank you, Aaron.
Talk to you later, guys.
Fuck yeah.
All right. We got to hit a bunch of stuff, and we have 9.5 minutes to do it. So we're just going to kind of jump all over the place, but I just had to play this sound because this story is amazing. So let's see if it works. And it's not working. Oh, wait.
Regressed and the bullpen collapsed. After consecutive loss number 12, Madden got a mohawk haircut to try to awaken his team. But the players never saw it. He was fired. The league's high-scoring offense stopped.
Let's let it run one more time.
Rotation regressed, and the bullpen collapsed. After consecutive loss number 12, Madden got a mohawk haircut to try to awaken his team. But the players never saw it. He was fired.
That is just the saddest thing ever. Poor Joe Madden, man. He's trying to switch things up. He's like, oh, wait, don't go to the clubhouse, dude. You're fired.
So, I mean, it took him this long to do that, though. That's a problem.
That's true,
probably
should
have everyone, like, you know, lost number 7 or something. Yeah. That team was too good to lose that many in a row.
I mean, so many things about this are just amazing. The fact that Joe Madden, who's in his 60s, got a haircut, mohawk in particular, thinking, you know what's going to stop our 12-game slide?
A mohawk. That would change my mood.
He had to have shaved that off immediately after he got fired, right?
I do wonder if he's still sporting it right now. If he's still sporting it right now, then I commend him. He's sticking to his guns right now, and he's like, they're winning now because of this mohawk.
Can you imagine just crying in the mirror as you're shaving your mohawk because you just got fired?
He probably got fired because he got the mohawk. They're like, all right, we can't have
wait, this is your answer this to is, this is how you're going to...
Yeah, this is how we're going to turn around our fortunes.
All right, 2-hour meeting we had last night.
You made this a lot easier than it had to be right now. Hasta luego.
I believe the Angels have won their last 3 games, by the way, too.
I mean, they lost last night to the Mets.
Okay.
But they did beat the Mets pretty handily.
2 out of 3, right?
2 out of 3, I want to say.
Well,
yeah. So they came back.
So it worked.
The losing streak is over.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, 14 in a row, that's tough.
Ouch.
What did you think of Jack Del Rio getting fined $100,000 for his comments about January 6th and comparing that to the BLM movement? He was fined by, why can I not think of the head coach's name? He was your old guy. Riverboat Ron.
Ron Rivera.
Ron Rivera.
Again, I just think it's just the inconsistencies in the NFL. Yeah. It's just like of what you go after and what we don't. Like, where is the line that we draw? And it's just like, you know, from the Deshaun Watson world right now to the Jack Del Rios, I'm not one to weigh the crimes out and whatnot. But, you know, I'm going to weigh it out. Okay, and one of them deserved to get fined, one of them didn't. And the one that got fined was the one I feel doesn't deserve that fine over what is comparatively out there. Mm-hmm. Not to say like what bad isn't bad. But it's just like the inconsistencies is always just what annoys me with everything. There's nothing, there's no bar there. It's just whatever they feel, they throw darts at the wall, I feel like. And like, this is where we're going to find them.
Yeah, and you also have the Gruden situation there, too. So it's like, and Gruden said it, and you have I'm forgetting the coach. I'm thinking Ron Rivera, but that's not it.
Del Rio
said it. It's like, these are pretty off the wall comments. You'd imagine he'd also be getting somewhat similar consequences like Gruden. Maybe a little bit less, but still something similar.
Well, Gruden lost his job over this.
Yes.
I don't think that anything he said was... I mean, it's a fireable offense if you choose to, because it is a workplace situation. It's a private entity, and you could decide how to punish however you want. Do I think it was a little tone deaf? Of course. But, I mean, at the same time, it just sets a weird precedent for what can we say. Now, I do think if Jack Del Rio had simply tweeted this or said it on a podcast, he's not getting hit with such a lofty fine. The only reason he did it is because it was during a press conference, and they're like, hey, don't say that with
our company
time.
Our logo behind
and that's
whatnot.
Where I'm like, okay.
And that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, and I understand that, but yeah, I was just curious.
Deshaun Watson still played on that field, though, you know?
Yeah.
And getting paid.
Do they really care about their image? Not really.
That's
a thing. It's
totally fair.
They
point.
Do and they don't. It's like we're gonna. I can't even. I don't complete it. I'm gonna stop.
Yeah. No. That's a totally fair point. I know you're on your way out. Do you have anything to say about F1 real quick before you leave?
Oh my goodness, Ferrari! What the hell?
What happened?
Bro.
I don't like these. I want parity. I want someone to come and challenge. And if Ferrari somehow falls out because they can't get their car together,
it's gonna suck.
Yeah. I mean, it's still kind of early on, but you are dropping valuable points. But
both cars going out though.
That's bad.
That's
both
horrible,
Ferrari cars.
Man.
Not finishing is terrible. Look, shouts to Red Bull. 1-2 again for Verstappen. Yeah. He's on his way, but Checo Perez, man.
Checo's right there. Dude.
Mexican Minister of Defense, baby. Woo-hoo! Come on. You get second place in the championship, that would be huge. But I would love to see him overtake Verstappen, that whiny little coward.
And talked about Mexicans. Shout out to Daniel Suarez for being the first Mexican born to win an NASCAR race.
Viva la raza. Totally inappropriate for me and you to chime in there, so thank you.
No. I know when to speak and I know when not to, and that is when not to. Unappropriateness, sir. Jokes are those were.
And shouts for Derek.
I was going to say.
Dude,
shouts to Derek. Good
Derek
for you.
Wore the
good
Giants
for
hat.
You.
You know what? It looks good on you, bro.
I got to ask. Head feels so awful. Does your head burn a little bit?
I don't want to go wash right now. I think I need a shower and shampoo.
Okay.
I'm glad it's going to be a while.
Bleach blonde right now, just so I don't have to like have the same hair. You know? Touching that.
Just shave it all off?
I might. You might.
You looked good in it.
Yeah. Don't say that.
You look great, actually.
All right,
y'all. Later, Derek.
So sexy.
Oh, man. Rudy, do you want to knock out a couple quick picks?
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you any sound.
No, that's fine. I got Boston tonight at +6. They're on the road playing at Chase Center tonight at 6 p.m., Boston +6. I got the Giants over the Royals. They started a 3-game series, so I believe they'll take 2 out of 3 out of them.
Okay.
And then we're going to roll again with the Giants on the road against the Pirates. I believe they'll take 2 out of 3 out of them, too. So let's get this money, boys. Let's go.
There you go. Do you want to do a quick Grinds My Gears on StubHub? Because we can't do a whole player here.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. Let's knock it out. This is amazing what happened to you, and I feel awful. I probably should not be on mute. There we go. My bad.
You know what really grinds my gears?
StubHub, what are you doing? I got a rude awakening Sunday morning. Darren and I had some baller tickets about for 7, 8, 9 rows up from my home plate. And I got a nice little email saying, hey, your tickets have been refunded. For what reason? God knows. Who knows? So we're like, okay, let's try to get another set of tickets. And I couldn't buy any. My account was frozen for no reason. Darren tried to do the same thing. He was saying the same thing. So their whole system crashed. Second time this has happened to me. First time happened at a Niner Chiefs game when I was at the gate saying that my tickets weren't working. And it wasn't only me. It was me and like 500 other fans trying to get in. So StubHub, try to get it right, man. Come on, man. Let's go.
All right, I got one.
You know what really grinds my gears?
San Francisco. All of you. What are we doing letting the Dodgers take over our stadium?
Dude.
Now, I'm not saying
there live, but.
Let's get violent. I'm saying the opposite of that. Let's just make them uncomfortable. They go to sit down in a bar. Just go ahead and ignore them.
Yeah.
They want to come into your hotel. Sorry. No vacancy. They want to get in your Uber. And you pull up and you see that they're wearing Dodgers blue. Go ahead and cancel that ride. Take a different one. Let's just make it multiple minuscule inefficiencies.
Yeah, there you go.
Inefficiencies?
You know, just make them uncomfortable. I'm not saying, again, just make everything inconvenient for them.
There you go.
Thank you. Inconveniences.
I was going to let you go with that. Okay.
It's been a long day, Brad. But I'm just saying we could do better as a city to make sure that the Dodgers fans don't come up here and call this Dodger Stadium North anymore, because they're just like, you know what? I don't want to go up there. I get terrible food service.
Yeah.
I can't catch an Uber anywhere.
I'm just saying, frowned upon anywhere. Yeah.
Instead of being violent, let's one up them and just give them multiple inconveniences that make them never want to come back.
Yeah.
That's it.
If they want to come into a restaurant, no, it's a 2-hour wait. Sir, this restaurant's empty. No, it's not.
For Giants fans, it's not.
Yeah, small
That's
stuff
all I'm
like
saying.
That.
I think we could go a long way, guys.
It could happen.
Yeah. You got anything?
I got something real quick. Right. We talked about Luke Barker making the MLB last week. And he had a great outing, great first outing. Past two weren't that great, but his second outing, a little bit memorable in not the best way. He gave up 4 runs, but one of them was a home run to Bryce Harper. His first home run given up was to Bryce Harper. So, little unfortunate fact, but a fact nonetheless. So, but the way he rebounded back right after that, got 2 quick outs right after the home run. So, good bounce back. I'm excited to see him in the future. So,
and he plays for who again?
Plays for the Brewers.
Brewers. Right.
Had a great minor league season and coming up, and had a great first start. Just the unfortunate 2 starts. But they've also all been on a losing streak. So it's not just him. It's the whole entire team that's just not playing.
Not
and their bats are just dead right now. So,
All right, well, that's going to do it for us. You can catch us next week. Go check out the pod, talking about practice, wherever your pods are found. Let's go, Dubs. It's been real, y'all. Peace.
Game over, man. It's game over.
Next up, Counterspin. Then, let's show. Here it is.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, some of the worst work that corporate news media do is to convince us that simple things are actually, if you just ignore the role of power, much more complicated than you could hope to understand. So, yes, COVID is killing millions of people, and yes, there are tests and treatments and vaccines for it. And yes, many countries are in need of those things. But no, we cannot put those things together for reasons that, well, you shouldn't worry your head over. There are, in fact, people and policies with names preventing developing countries from accessing life-saving vaccines and treatment. And a story being ugly doesn't mean that it isn't understandable. We'll talk about that with Lori Wallach, executive director of the group Rethink Trade. At the same time, we are to understand that insurance companies exist to protect us from exorbitant expenses when we're faced with healthcare crises. You might be mad paying in when you're healthy, but oh boy, just wait till you're sick. So, COVID-19 could hardly be a bigger public healthcare crisis. So, where are insurance companies? Shouldn't this be their shining hour? And if not, can we please revisit their purpose in our lives? We'll talk about insurance in a pandemic with physician and advocate Steffi Woolhandler. That's all coming up, and we're going to get right to it. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. The World Health Organization announced that nearly 15 million people have died as a direct or indirect result of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's almost three times as many as officially reported. The information, the group said, doesn't just illustrate the devastating impact of the pandemic, but also, quote, the need for countries to invest in more resilient health systems that can sustain essential health services during crises, including strong health information systems, close quote. Well, surely that includes tests, treatments, and vaccines. And there's a role there for journalism in appropriately reporting the importance and the availability of these public health tools. In particular, there are COVID vaccines that seem to be effective, yet vast portions of the global population remain unvaccinated. What is standing in the way, put simply? Our next guest has been working on that question. Lori Wallach has been decoding trade policy for decades. She's now executive director at Rethink Trade. She joins us by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Lori Wallach.
Thank you very much.
Well, we hear night and noon about markets, about supply and demand. If there's a need, suppliers will rush to fill it, and everybody's going to be satisfied. Well, there could hardly be a more obvious need than the need for COVID vaccines. So if you were trying to break down for people why so many people, in particular in the global south, are still not vaccinated, what's the deal? How do we explain it?
Well, the market does not work in the face of monopolies. And in the case of these medicines, a handful of now billionaire pharmaceutical companies have monopoly control over these life-saving medicines. So, for instance, we know by far the most effective vaccines are the mRNA vaccines, including the one developed using U.S. government money by Moderna, And we know now there are new Moderna billionaires created by the profits of selling masks. And Moderna has simply refused to license the information to have more production around the world so a greater volume of that vaccine could be produced. And part of the obstacle is Big Pharma got inserted into so-called free trade agreements, binding obligations on countries to maintain and enforce these monopolies, which are government-created monopoly licenses called patents, and other forms of intellectual property monopoly that literally have made it possible for a few very big companies to control supplies, control production, and have a situation where today, less than 20% of people in developing countries are vaccinated.
I don't want to overuse the word perverse, but it's hard to see past it in this case. Even folks who believe that, you know, if you build a better mousetrap, you ought to get the profit from that, can see that this is not a system working in a way that it should for the public good. So I guess I'm asking, what has been the pushback against this? Clearly, folks are aware that this protection of patents is slowing down and harming human life around the globe. And what have been the efforts to push back against it?
I will discuss that, but I wanted to say one thing, which is the issue at stake isn't taking away someone's creation or invention.
Right.
It's taking away the ability to control how much of it's being made.
Yes.
So these companies would get paid. They would get a licensing fee. They just wouldn't be able to make it such that they can reduce supply and drive up prices. Or in this instance, they don't want to share the technological innovation of the mRNA platform because they figure the next drug they can also monopolize. So if the many companies around the global south that could be making these wonder drugs learn how to do it, the companies like Pfizer and Moderna theorize, then the next drug, if it's for cancer, if it's what forever, they won't be able to control. It is diabolical. And so in the face of that, there's been a huge push in numerous countries to do three things. One, to get a temporary emergency waiver of the rules in the World Trade Organization that require every WTO signatory country to enforce those corporate pharma monopolies. Number two, to have government technology transfer. The U.S. government has authority under statutes like the Defense Production Act, particularly with respect to the Moderna vaccine, which the U.S. 100% paid for to have developed and then paid for all the doses of. The Moderna vaccine, the access to the information the government could require as a matter of national emergency, be licensed. They could make them do it, even if the WTO waiver weren't done for worldwide access. And then number three is sufficient funding so that though it is no substitute for countries being able to make their own, enough doses could be bought and shared around the world. And currently, on all three fronts, there's been total failure. And this very weekend, the WTO's fight is coming to a head about whether or not the European Union, the United Kingdom, and Switzerland will block the entire rest of the world, block it on behalf of Big Pharma. The U.S. has taken a fairly constructive position in this, and yet it could be blocked such that we go forward into another year of pandemic with a situation that means not just are people going to die needlessly and have their livelihoods destroyed, but new variants are going to spring up. Any place around the world there is rampant outbreak of COVID is the place where new variants that could come back to get people who are vaccinated for the current variant. It's short-sighted in every front, to say nothing of immoral.
Is there a fallacy at the heart of this? Can we ever retire the notion that if manufacturers don't get exclusive intellectual property rights, that they will never be incentivized to do anything? You've already indicated that this is, in fact, public spending that has gone into the creation of some of these things. But I still feel when you read media coverage, you get the idea that, you know, if we don't incentivize these companies, they won't do the research. And I just feel that's like a hardy perennial fallacy that we see again and again in media in terms of medical research and things like this.
Well, you know, the choice isn't between no return on investment or price gouging and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
There is a happy medium where, of course, people who've made genius inventions should be rewarded for their creativity and hard work. But having, for instance, the ability in the face of a pandemic to simply control medicines that mean people will live or people will die. The global economy will or will not collapse. This is an emergency circumstance for which there was to be an emergency waiver. Again, the companies were going to get paid.
Right.
So it wasn't whether or not they would lose all control of their invention. But once the rich countries that could pay had paid, could people in the poor countries who were never going to pay the same amount per dose because their governments couldn't afford it, could they have access at a lower price? Could they have access because there'd be a larger volume at any price? In most of the developing world, it has been entirely impossible to get the cutting-edge mRNA vaccines that are most effective. And right now, with Paxlovid, the treatment that is the difference between COVID being a death sentence and COVID being something that will make you uncomfortable if you're a high-risk person or if you're someone who hasn't been vaccinated, Pfizer is only licensing production of that medicine in the poorest countries. So if you're in a middle-income country, you simply can't get it. It's simply not available. That is not a matter of reward or not reward.
Yeah.
That is extreme greed, where you could have a reward and have people live. And that is why we need to replace our current IP system to have it more balanced, so that innovation is rewarded, but medicine is available at prices that people, particularly in developing countries, can pay.
Well, let me just ask you finally, if you are talking to journalists about who, you know, they're going to cover the story, the issue, but are there avenues and questions they might ask that they've not been doing that might shine a more helpful light on this?
I think there's been a lot of spin about what's gone on. Here's the reality. At the World Trade Organization in October 2020, South Africa and India proposed an emergency short-term waiver of all the intellectual property provisions necessary to be able to make these mRNA vaccines. And it's not just patents. It's certain technology transfer of undisclosed information. It's certain copyright provisions. It's certain what's called industrial design exclusivities. And it was for the duration, short-term, of the pandemic. And it would have made an enormous difference in who would have lived and who would have died. And here we are almost 2 years later, and this emergency waiver mechanism has not been usable. And the press has not really covered the whys about this. And in fact, they keep reporting things that aren't the case. For instance, right now, the WTO has shifted from focusing on saving lives to saving its reputation. The director general of the WTO has put forward a rump tax supported only by the European Union, i.e. the key blocker of the actual needed removal of the IP barriers,
mm-hmm.
and is trying to railroad that into approval to announce the WTO is relevant and is locking countries, big developing countries that have been having a role in this debate for 2 years, locking them in the hall, literally won't let them in the negotiating room,
wow.
is spinning up a storm of how we've come to a compromise. In fact, the text that's now being discussed explicitly is not a waiver and does not get any of the IP barriers out of the way and wouldn't put a single more vaccine into access in the developing world. And a lot of reporters keep calling it a waiver when there isn't one, keep
right.
calling it a compromise when there isn't one, keep pretending that negotiations on the WTO's IP barriers getting out of the way are still ongoing when they're not. And they're not really holding accountable the pharmaceutical corporations, the European Union, or the WTO staff. Plus, the U.S. has basically in the last 6 months not played a great hand in that the U.S. position has been any WTO deal can only be about vaccines, not about the treatment. And so the treatments, basically, under any circumstance, under the U.S. view, being excluded from this potential ability to make more volume,
right,
mean that the U.S. strategy, which is treat and test, test and treat, would not be available for most of the world. And it's just something that didn't have to be. So what we see happening around the world is countries basically ready to escalate, and civil society activists as well. If you can't use the legal procedures, then it's time for direct action. Ideally going around all of these limits, but if necessary, to just ignore them. Basically direct action to get the meds made and let the lawsuits fall later.
All right, then. Well, we're going to pick this up again in the future, but we'll end it here for now. We've been speaking with Lori Wallach. She's executive director of Rethink Trade, online at rethinktrade.org. Lori Wallach, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
We don't generally do media criticism by counterfactual, but it seems fair to ask, given that we are told that insurance companies protect us, you pay into them for a reason, and that it's about things happening to you that you don't have control over. So how are insurers responding to a genuinely public health crisis like COVID-19? You don't have to be poor or black or an immigrant to be affected by this. So it should be a genuine test. Joining us now with an assessment is Steffi Woolhandler. She's a physician and professor at City University of New York and co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. She joins us now by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Steffi Woolhandler.
My pleasure.
Well, like I say, we don't generally talk about what media don't do, but I have not seen really any coverage about the way that insurers are responding to a public health crisis. So I guess I would ask you, what would insurers have done ideally, but then what's actually happening?
Well, the major insurers saw 2020 as a giant opportunity for profiteering.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened is they had been receiving a little more than half of their total revenues from the government, either the federal government through the Medicare program or combined federal and state through the Medicaid program. So our so-called private insurers were already largely publicly funded. When the pandemic hit, believe it or not, the total costs of delivering health care fell dramatically. And that's because so many people were afraid to go get elective surgery, afraid to see their doctors, so that the revenues of hospitals and doctors' offices plummeted, the payments to doctors and hospitals plummeted. Even as some hospitals were, you know, swimming in COVID patients, they still saw their total revenues for all disease categories go way down. Now, the insurance industry, meanwhile, had already collected the premiums from the government, and they never bothered to give any of it back, and apparently the federal and state governments never demanded any of it back. Because by the end of the year, the largest insurers had seen huge jumps in their insurance overhead. That's the money they received as premiums and never paid out to doctors and hospitals. Massive increases in what is known as insurance overhead. And, you know, they put virtually all of that into their pockets as profits. You know, you can hide some of it by expanding or something called intercorporate transfers, where they mush the money around within their own corporation between subsidiaries. But by and large, they just pocketed this money as high overhead. And the thing that's interesting from a media criticism point of view is that this was right there in plain sight when the official government figures for health spending were released in December. The official government figures showed huge increases in private insurance company overhead, and they showed that most of those increases came from the overhead they were getting from the federal and state government. So what ended up happening is they just got a whole lot richer, and they turned around and had use that for high profits, for expansion, to take over more of the public Medicare and Medicaid programs. And there was essentially no coverage of it. What happened when the government figures came out in December was much of the media covered the other finding, which was quite expected, which was government public health expenditures jumped in 2020. Of course they did. That was what was supposed to happen. But the media failed to cover the figures that were there in plain sight showing a massive increase in insurance companies' overhead and profits.
I feel like a dummy in looking at this because we're in a moment where we are supposedly really seriously looking at healthcare, you know, and health expenses in this country. And so I feel genuinely confused about why we have a system or continue to have a system that would do that, you know, where we would be facing a genuine public health crisis and we would be seeing profiteering from the very people who were told, you know, yes, you pay when you're healthy and that seems bad, but when you're sick, that's when you'll be really grateful for it. And that seems like the opposite of what's happening here.
Well, when you go into a public health system, a public health insurance system, that is kind of what happened. So before Medicare was privatized by the Medicare Advantage industry, you know, we were all paying a lot of money into Medicare out of our payroll taxes. Once you turned 65, you paid a premium. But then if you got sick, essentially all of that money was paid out to take care of sick people. You know, 98% of all the money that goes into traditional Medicare comes out as payments to doctors or hospitals or drug companies. Only 2% ever went for Medicare's overhead, you know, pushing the papers around and keeping track of people. But you have to look at the Medicare Advantage industry, which is taking over traditional Medicare, where year upon year, they report overhead of 15%. So 15% of the total cost is being scraped off the top for the overhead and profits of Medicare Advantage industry. And in 2020, they got an extra opportunity to make even larger profits. So the year before the pandemic, their overhead was about $1,800 per Medicare enrollee. I mean, already a huge amount of money. That $1,800 for every Medicare Advantage enrollee is just going for insurance overhead.
Right.
Outrageous. But during the pandemic, that overhead soared and was more than $2,200 per enrollee in 2020. And what should have happened is that government should have said, wait, we paid for this. We're clawing it right back, you know, using it for medical care or returning it to the taxpayers. But in fact, it was ignored, this giant leap in overhead. And just recently, the Biden administration announced that he was going to actually increase the payments to the private Medicare Advantage industry. He gave them an 8.5% increase this year. So, you know, there's lots of talk about, oh, what are we going to do about costs? What are we going to do about inflation? But no one is talking very much about what are we going to do with the private insurance industry taking over Medicare and Medicaid and inflating the cost of care in those programs, which is exactly what we saw in 2020, which is right there in the National Health Expenditure Accounts, the numbers the government released. And no one wants to talk about it because the private health insurance industry has this formidable lobbying force in every state and every congressional district, and they're just getting their message across to Congress and the government, you know, don't interfere with our profit making.
And, you know, private insurers also play a big role in board membership in media organizations, which is a thing that FAIR has looked at. But it's a very kind of silent or stealthy influence because it's not made explicit. It's just kind of guardrails. We can't do this. You know, it might make sense. Oh, no. Somehow, for some reason, we can't take this common sense response or this public health response to what's going on. It's weird.
It's weird. It's a public health response. And it's also, you know, if we're going to fight costs and inflation, we have to look for unnecessary costs. And there it is sitting there, huge overhead and profits in these private insurance industries. They're private in name only, since at this point, more than half of their funding is coming straight out of the taxpayers. we ought to be looking at that and saying, no, we cannot afford to waste 15% or more on private insurance industry overhead when the fully public traditional Medicare program could do the same job for 2% overhead.
Absolutely. Well, Steffi, we use you as an object lesson at FAIR. You might not know this, but years ago, there was a conversation on what was then called the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, I guess, PBS NewsHour, in which we were talking about public health care and single payer and a response to public health care needs. And you were one of four participants on a panel talking about actually publicly funding health care. And the host, which I'm guessing was Jim Lehrer, said, well, you know, Ms. Wohlhandler, you're in the minority here with your trying to argue for single payer or something like that. And you, because you had the presence of mind to do it, said, well, I'm only in the minority here because of the panel that you have selected, you know? And in fact, and this is what I'm bringing it round to, in fact, the U.S. public has in mind, has this frustration that we're talking about, has an understanding that there is a better way to do this. And media, it's not just what they hide, but they don't actually fairly represent public opinion in terms of what the U.S. public is interested in and needs in terms of health care.
I think that's true. I think the majority of American people hate the private health insurance industry, recognize that their business model is to get as much money from you as they can in premiums and pay out as little as they possibly can in health care. That's not going to be surprising to listeners that that's the business model of private health insurance. Polls are still showing more than 60% of Americans support a single-payer Medicare for all. And certainly there are bills in Congress. The Sanders bill in the Senate was just reintroduced. The Jayapal bill in the House was just reintroduced. But the media coverage of it, the discussion of anger at private insurance companies, of the profiteering by private insurance companies, is really very minimal. And I do think media can be doing a better job when data comes out, as came out in December, showing the extent of profiteering the private insurance industry, covering that information and not what in fact happened, where the only thing what was said, oh, look, healthcare costs went up 10%. It's all because of public health spending. That's not true. There was public health spending, and then there was insurance industry profiteering that caused health costs to go up so fast.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Steffi Wohlhandler, physician, professor at CUNY, and co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. Thank you so much, Steffi Wohlhandler, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Here it is! From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, nobody hired me as a television critic. But, you know, I'm sitting there watching. I got an opinion. And after it was over, and by it I mean the primetime hearing, I turned to my partner and I said, well, that was it? And she said, yeah, huh. And then we tuned into everybody else, like Wolf Blitzer calling it a bombshell hearing. I didn't even see tortoise shells, peanut shells. I didn't. All right, so here it is. You get one shot if you're the January 6th committee. You get one shot in prime time to sort of say, hey, pay attention to this. This is important. This is a thing. And then you present two live witnesses, a documentarian who testifies that, I think the Proud Boys met with the Oath Keepers once that I was there for. And the other was a policewoman who was injured in the line of duty. Okay, Republicans aren't so pro-police when they got other priorities, is what that showed, I guess. And that was the two. I mean, yes, Congresswoman Cheney presented an opening statement. But if you're trying to convince anybody